As long as the dark foundation of our nature, grim in its all-encompassing egoism, mad in its drive to make that egoism into reality, to devour everything and to define everything by itself, as long as that foundation is visible, as long as this truly original sin exists within us, we have no business here, and there is no logical answer to our existence. Imagine a group of people who are all blind, deaf, and slightly demented, and suddenly someone in the crowd asks, "What are we to do?" The only possible answer is, look for a cure. Until you are cured, there is nothing you can do. And since you don't believe you are sick, there can be no cure. And that was said by Vladimir Solovyov. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. There truly is a sickness that infects most of humanity, folks. In fact, if one is to stand back and look at the world objectively, it seems to be quite obvious that the human race collectively has gone quite mad. When you look at the way we treat ourselves, treat the planet, treat the people around us, and when you see the pursuits that we indulge in, the meaningless collection of money and possessions which break down and fall apart, and how each of us during the short time that we have on this planet seem to be intent on building a bigger castle than everybody else so that at the end of our lives we can say, well, yes, we've got this huge pile of stuff now, even though it just doesn't mean anything. And yet collecting this stuff seems to be the main focus of our lives. And we judge ourselves by how much stuff we've got, because we appear to presume that the meaning of our life is the one with the most stuff wins. But what if life isn't supposed to be like that, folks? What if it really isn't about collecting stuff? What if there is actually more to life than collecting stuff? And what if there's more to reality than what most people believe and what most people can perceive? And what if the collection of stuff and the social systems that we've been given to mold ourselves into, what if these are simply a distraction? And in fact, folks, if you look at the world, you find that all of this is a distraction, and that the human race is little more than a hamster on a wheel, running, 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 running as fast as it can, always busy, but going no place in particular. And because it's running so fast on the wheel, it also pays no attention to its surroundings. It doesn't really stop and look around. It's just running on the wheel, and all the while going no place in particular. Well, nowhere in particular except old age, where one will find themselves sitting atop their pile of stuff, possibly wondering what it was all for. And those are the lucky ones. And not really lucky because they have a pile of stuff, but lucky because they still have enough mental aptitude to ponder what it was about. But what if there was a very different way of doing things? What if mankind had far more potential than what our self-styled rulers would have us believe? Far more potential than what our education system teaches us? And folks, seriously, if you look at the world today, and you look at what we've done to the world, you look at the amount of degradation on this planet, you look at the amount of wars that are being fought, the amount of homelessness, the environmental damage, the stuff that we've done, well, I would suggest, folks, that absolutely there is a better way of doing things, and that we do have far more potential than what we're led to believe. I mean, we certainly have the potential to destroy the place, and so it stands to reason that we also have the potential to fix it. And when I say we, I'm using the collective we. I'm speaking about we as a species, because ultimately, folks, it is we as a species that has caused all the damage on this planet. But you can't really blame the vast majority of people, because the vast majority of people have been trained by rulers and by a corrupt education system to believe that life is different to what it really is, and that reality is different to what it really is, and that what mankind's place in the universal food chain is vastly different to what it actually is. So people have been taught, they've been indoctrinated, they've been trained to behave exactly the way they behave. And that's why it's very difficult to judge them. So what you need to do really is you need to step back and look at the system, look at the whole overall system and see how it functions, and then attempt to figure out what it has been that has caused us to go down the path that we're going. What's brought us to this point that we are currently at, where the whole human race is quite literally standing on a knife edge? It really is. We've got so much tension around the planet at the moment that it's anybody's guess as to which way we could go. We've got a Western media here that is so intently brainwashing people and pushing and pushing and pushing for war and for more and more control of the population. And we have a really, really tense situation, folks. So I think it's about time that people really stepped back and started to pay attention to what's going on and really started to pay attention to the potential that they have. Because we've got to look at the problems in order to discover our potential, folks. We've got to understand that it's us that has brought us here. It's the actions of people that have brought us to this point, and therefore the situation can only be fixed through the actions of people. And it can't be the people that have brought us here. We can't allow these people to attempt to fix the problem, because these are the ones who created the problem to begin with. The problem can only be fixed, remedy can only be found by the rest of the people, the vast majority of the population of this world, shifting their perspective and viewing reality in an entirely new way, and then applying this newfound knowledge and this newfound understanding of themselves to reality. That's the only way it can be fixed. That's the only place remedy will be found. It can only be found within the hearts of the people. And it's really interesting, folks, when you look at what we've got today in the world. I mean, sure, technology's great. We've got a lot of good stuff. We've done a lot of good things, but we've also done a lot of bad things, because we've moved our society away from being something that actually supports and nurtures and complements humanity, and complements life at all. It really doesn't complement life. It seeks to replace life. And we need to step back and look at it and see what it has been, what the methodology has been that has skewed us from our spiritual path, if you will, our evolutionary path, our path of destiny, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. But when you really look at mankind's potential and what we are capable of doing and where we are capable of going, if we were to realize this potential, then you've got to question what has brought us here. And you've got to examine this history and examine the global situation from a logical perspective. And we do that in many ways, folks, but unfortunately we only use left brain logic, and we should be using our whole brain, left brain logic and right brain logic. You've got to look at the world as a picture. Look at the human experience as a picture, a story in art, the art of mankind, the art of living. Everything you do is your art. The way you drive your car, that is your art of driving. The way you paint a picture is your art. The way you live your life, the way you express yourself is your art. Your whole life is an artistic statement, and it's the same for every single person. You are each a unique art form, a unique expression of art, because your active consciousness, your intention, your perspective of reality, this is the art of that particular frequency of consciousness. The art of living, the art of driving, the art of painting, the art of loving, the art of caring. It's all art, folks. Your life is art. And we've very much forgotten that. But if you can apply that type of a view to your life and view your life as a logical artistic statement, and not only a logical left brain analytical statement, then you can begin to see things a little more clearly. And you can see very clearly the predicament that the human race is currently in. Because we really are in a predicament, folks. I mean, Exhibit A, the Earth. You've just got to look at the state of this place and look at the state of human consciousness. Look at the direction we're going. Look at what's happening in the Middle East. Look what's happening in Fukushima. Look what's happening to the whales. Look what's happening in your own city. Look what's happening in your own backyard. Look what's happening to your own finances. Look at what's happening with your local council. Look at what's happening in every country around the planet. Look how much the people are struggling in order to support this economic model. And folks, yes, we have some real issues here, and we need to address these issues. But we have to step back and look at the world logically from our whole brain and see the art of mankind, what this art has become, and the direction this art is going. And it is then, I believe, that we will begin to find remedy. Because we're not going to find that remedy until we can learn to look at ourselves and look at the world holistically. And you see, I believe, folks, that when you view the world as an artistic statement, and when you view your life as an artistic statement, you begin to see things differently, and you begin to see the problems that we face. They're almost like black spots in the picture, bits where the paint didn't dry properly or where there was ink splashed on the scene or something. But when you can view life in this way, you do begin to see things differently. It's almost like a history book, and you realize that we are writing the history book right now, and that we could go in any direction. The problem is that we don't realize that we're writing it at the moment, and so we're leaving the authoring of this reality to other people. We're not really participating in it ourselves. But if you look at human history, and you look at human life as an artistic statement, and you look at it as a picture, and you see how it was painted, how it was created, then you begin to see where we skewed from our path, where things went wrong, and how the system is perpetuated, and where it's taking us. Because what's happening is it's taking us in a certain direction, and it's kind of sailing along willy-nilly. There's nobody really at the helm. There's all these different ideas that are sort of congealing and gelling into this one direction. But ultimately, it's like this big experiment that's gone wrong. And it looks like it's heading towards a place where it's quite literally going to implode. Okay, so looking at life artistically, looking at the state of the world as an artistic statement, looking at it as a picture, then you also begin to see the art of those who control the planet, the picture that they have painted, and the way they've done it. And of course, folks, if you want to control a species or if you want to control a group of people, the first step in controlling these people is to divide them amongst themselves. And when you look at the human species as a whole, look at it as a planetary organism, then you begin to see how this division has been brought about. Racial division, social division, class division, religious division. Racial division is an interesting one, folks. Racial division is something that is so contrived and so based in fear that it stuns me. It really does. I remember when I was a little boy, I lived in Adelaide, South Australia, and there was a little girl that I met in grade one at school. Her name was Helen Kimber. And I've never forgotten this little girl because of out of all the people in the school that I met, she was the one that I really got along with. When I looked at her, she had these bright eyes and this quick smile, and we became the best of friends very, very quickly. I was 5 years old and I was in grade one, my first day of school even. I met this girl and we became great friends. Helen Kimber was, in fact, my first great childhood friend, the first real friend I ever made as a child. And I absolutely used to love the time that I spent in her company. We just got on the way people were meant to get on. Within a week, though, I had fallen foul with a lot of the other kids at school. I didn't know why, but they just didn't seem to like me. So Helen and I used to sit by ourselves mostly and play by ourselves in the break, and that was fine. We used to have a great time by ourselves, but we found that the other kids were quite aggressive towards us, and I just didn't know why. And I remember actually getting quite beaten within my first week of school by another child who beat me and rubbed my face into the ground and literally took most of the skin off my face. All my cheeks and my nose and my forehead. I went home and I was quite scarred and beaten, and I didn't know why anyone had attacked me. But I persevered through that, and I used to go and visit my little friend Helen for a couple of weeks. I used to go up to her house, and she used to come down to my house, and we used to play, and we had a great time together. I still remember one day when I went to Helen's place, the beautiful smile of her mother as she greeted me at the front steps. She was so happy that I was there to visit her daughter and to play. And these were really a beautiful family and such a pleasure to be around. But then my mother kept pushing me towards this other little girl that she wanted me to be friends with. And I couldn't understand why, because I didn't really like the other little girl. We just didn't get on, we just didn't click, and I just preferred to be in the company of my little friend Helen. But then Helen and her parents had to move, and they moved not too far, only a few miles away from where I lived, but I lost contact with her and never saw her again, and always felt that I'd lost a great friend and someone that I was supposed to know in my life. And it wasn't until years later when I thought about Helen and I realized that Helen had dark skin. And that was something that I didn't notice when I was a child. I didn't know that she was black or Indian, or I don't know where she came from. I don't know whether she was Aboriginal or whether she was Negro or whether she was from India, but she was a darker skinned girl and her parents were dark skinned. And I hadn't noticed when I was a child. It didn't mean anything to me because what I saw was the spirit and the light in the eyes of these people. And I saw them as real people. They were the only real people that I'd met in all of my mother's friends and all of the people that I'd met at school. These were the realest people I had ever come across. And so that's who I was naturally attracted to. And that's why I believe that racism is something that is absolutely taught to people, and it is absolutely and wholly based in fear. And it's another form of fear-based mind control that's been set up and put there deliberately to divide. Because I see all races as beautiful. I don't see any difference between any skin color or any nationality or anything. People are just people, and they're here to experience life from the perspective that they've been given. And racism removes that perspective from people, and I absolutely believe that it is contrived and it is taught to people. It's not a conclusion we would come to naturally. I think that if children were left to their own devices, racism is simply not the direction they would take. As I said, folks, it's just another form of fear-based mind control. And that's really one of the main tools that's used to divide people. It's all fear-based mind control. And it's interesting, folks, because when you get locked into a state of fear, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You become fearful of something that doesn't actually exist, because most fear is based in the illusion of fear. Because most fear is based on the non-existential. Most fear is based in something that may happen, which doesn't exist right now. And usually it's just a possibility that it could happen, which is completely and utterly fictional. It's a complete illusion. So most people who are in a state of fear are in fear of something that does not actually exist. And they say that fear of the non-existential is insanity. And so that's what we have, folks. We have a society which functions according to different socially acceptable levels of insanity, which are determined upon the level of fear that each person feels. And fear can be very, very persuasive in what people do. It can really, really affect people in very significant ways. Look at Angelina Jolie recently. Just because she had a certain gene that people believe may cause cancer, bear in mind she didn't have cancer, but she had a gene which they believe may lead to breast cancer, she went and had a mastectomy, which has then caused all of these women around the world to go and get themselves mutilated. And if that isn't a perfect example of what fear-based mind control can do to people, then I don't know what is. And again, it's always fear of that which does not actually exist. And what Angelina Jolie just did is a perfect example of that. Fear is very, very useful in controlling people, folks, and getting people to do things they would not otherwise do. And this is why fear is promoted so much within our governments, and it's promoted so much within our society. Indeed, fear is the basis of all of the NSA spying that we just saw. I mean, why would the United States government be wanting to wiretap the entire planet? It's because they're scared someone's out to get them somewhere, and they're not going to feel comfortable with themselves until anybody who they believe may pose a threat to them one day, possibly, is eliminated. That's pure fear, folks, and that's pure psychopathy. And that's why I often say that we have a psychopathic society, and the main mechanism that it uses to control people is fear-based mind control and division. The controlling hand on this planet wants the people of this world to remain divided, because otherwise they believe that they will unite against the controlling hand, which is exactly what the people should do. And the mechanism that they use to do this is division, which is created from fear-based mind control. And like I said, folks, these create self-fulfilling prophecies. You have someone who is in fear of that which does not exist, and so that person takes steps to protect themselves against this non-existent force, and their action in doing this actually creates that non-existent force. You live in a society or in a culture, in a village, in a tribal culture, in any situation where everybody lives in a state of abundance, but suddenly you become scared that other people may come and take what you've got, and so you put a fence around your house. The fence that you've put around your house makes people wonder what you've got to hide. He must have something in there that he doesn't want us to take. So they climb over the fence and they come into your house and they take all your stuff. So you created the situation yourself. And this is what we've done as a society, folks. America is so scared that somebody somewhere out there might be out to get it, that it's created this whole global surveillance network. And because it's done this and it's taken all these steps to protect itself against some possible outside invader that may exist somewhere in the world someday, and that the only way they can ever protect themselves against ever being controlled by anybody else is to control everybody else on the planet. And this is purely psychopathic, folks. This is exactly the way a psychopathic mind works. But because they've done this, and they've believed that everybody is out to get them and the only way to protect themselves is to control everybody else, then now the whole world's attention has been turned to the United States, and they are creating that global enemy that they always believed that they had via their own actions in trying to protect themselves against a non-existent enemy. And it's not just the United States, folks. This is just where it's most visible. It's really the entire Western world, because that type of fear-based mind control, that type of fear-based social system has now gone out and infected the rest of the Western world. And again, this simply promotes self-fulfilling prophecies within people and within countries. And the same thing could be said for many people, folks. The same thing could be said for many religious sects. The same thing could be said for Israel. The amount of steps Israel has taken to defend itself against non-existent enemies, it's created enemies all the while that it's done that. When really before white people got involved and before the Holy Land of Israel was turned into a country or a state and a nuclear power, then there was no real animosity in the Middle East. Everybody got along fine. But it was that desperate need to protect themselves and protect their right to be Jewish which created all the animosity that now exists towards the Jewish religion. And now, as we can see, folks, the desperate attempts that Israel is taking to defend itself against everybody else, and because the people of Israel have always believed that they are the most hated and persecuted race in history, they are basically persecuting everybody else, and they've been so desperate to protect Israel, they are causing Israel to implode via their own actions and the fear that they hold that it may implode. So these again are self-fulfilling prophecies, folks, that are all based in fear, and because this fear does take over the mind, it causes the mind to create all the problems that it can imagine to be there. And we often do this, folks. We do this on many levels. Very often people will enter into relationships and they're so terrified that their partner will play up on them or leave them that they smother their partner and won't give them any space at all to be themselves, which ends up destroying their relationship. So again, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And every time we do this, folks, it's always based in fear. Fear of that which does not exist right now. Now, admittedly, in applying this type of fear-based mind control to things such as the American government and saying, well, this is what caused the NSA to do the spying that it did. Well, a lot of it was based on fear, but a lot of it was also based on control. And that's what this whole corporate system is about as well. It's about control. But then you've got to really look at it and say, well, why would anyone want that control to begin with? why would it be so important to control everybody else on the planet? Well, again, folks, you only would want to control everybody on the planet because you believe that it is only by controlling everybody else that you can prevent anybody else from controlling you. But why would you believe people would want to control you? If you know who or what you are, you know that each person on this planet is a unique expression of creation, then how can anyone control you? So again, folks, all desire to control others basically stems from fear. Fear-based mind control. And it is this fear-based mind control that is used against the people of the Western world to great effect. Indeed, it is fear-based mind control that has really brought us to where we are now. It is the fear-based mind control that is used to create the division that we see so rampant in our society. And it's on all levels, folks. The fear of poverty, which causes people within our society to exploit each other. Fear-based mind control. The fear of not measuring up to where we believe we should be on the social ladder. Again, fear-based mind control. The fear of not passing at school and getting good grades so you may not get a good job. Fear-based mind control. Peer group pressure, wondering how we measure up in the eyes of the opposite sex. Instead of seeing sex as something natural, we see it as something based on how attractive or rich we can make ourselves. Again, fear-based mind control. It really is the basis of the entire system, folks, and it is this fear-based mind control which causes us to set ourselves apart from everybody else and to not really worry about what others think. Always look after number one. There's a sucker born every minute, and no one's going to look after you except yourself, and so you are the only one that you should worry about. And again, folks, it's all simply division that stems from fear-based mind control. But I think we've reached break time here, folks, so I'll have to leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break. It's a pleasure to have your company on the air today, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, folks, there is no doubt that we are seeing a huge awakening happening around the planet. Look what's happening in Egypt. Look what's happening all around the world. There are so many people that are coming online. The protests in Egypt are absolutely massive. And even though it's likely that both sides are being puppeteered by Western interests, it's still a very, very dangerous game that's being played in Egypt. I mean, even when the Morsi government came to power and took over from Mubarak, who had held the reins of a dictatorship there for many years, even if Morsi was a Western puppet or a flake who was ultimately serving Western and Israeli interests, and there should be no doubt of that, folks, that's what he was, for all the pretenses of being with the Muslim Brotherhood, it was still a government that was very, very sympathetic to the West. There was no attempt to rectify the situation in Gaza, in fact, quite the opposite. And so there's no doubt that that was a puppet regime that had been put in place. But because it was put in place via revolution, this is something that the Egyptian people have not had for a very long time. And even though it was a staged revolution, it really did inspire the people to the concept that if they have the weight of numbers, they can bring about change. And that's what we've seen with this recent overthrow of Morsi's government. We've seen a huge surge of people power because the people truly believe and they know in their hearts now that the power of community, the power of the people, through a peaceful stance of non-compliance, can change anything. It can topple any regime. It can bring about any change in government that the people want. And that's what has been inspired with the Egyptian people. And even if this current crisis in Egypt and the overthrow of the Morsi government, even if they were to put someone in place like El Baradei, who is another UN puppet, it's doubtful that that puppet regime will last long either, because now the Egyptian people know that they have the strength of numbers and that the strength of numbers can accomplish anything. And we're seeing this right around the planet. And really, folks, what it is a demonstration of what can be achieved through peaceful non-compliance to governments that have ceased to serve the best interests of the people. And folks, when you look at the state of the world, you've got to understand that this is virtually all governments. All of these institutions have ceased to serve the needs of the people. This is virtually ubiquitous around the entire planet. And I think it's about time we paid attention to our own backyard. Now, I'm not calling for revolution or anything like that. What I'm calling for is the same thing that I've been calling for the last 6 years, peaceful non-compliance to a system that has ceased to serve the best interest of the people. And as I've also often said, folks, there's no way to do this within the parameters of the legal system. There's no way to seek legal remedy. You've got to step above the legal system and realize that these governments are simply public trustees. And what we've seen with these massive revelations of Edward Snowden and the huge amount of global surveillance that's been carried out by the NSA is what this has shown. It's clearly shown that a number of Western governments are in fact colluding to carry out criminal activity against the rest of the world. And these are our governments, folks. And I put it to you that these governments are all in breach of trust. This is a clear breach of trust. This is a breach of the trust that we gave them when we appointed them as managers of our infrastructure. And we need to pay attention to our own backyard. We can't find a remedy within the legal system because these governments who stand in breach of trust were the ones who constructed the legal system. So we have to step above that. And we need to ask these governments to show cause why they should not be held in breach of trust because of their actions in conducting espionage against not only their own citizens, but also the rest of the planet. And not only that, folks, but they've been doing it in our name. And a lot of people believe that it's okay for them to do this because they're locked into a state of fear. This whole society is based on fear. They've got people in a state of fear-based mind control where they believe the whole world is out to get them. And because they're not doing anything wrong personally, then it's okay for the government to spy on everybody else because that's going to keep them safe. And this is fiction, folks. This is what the government has cooked up to convince the people of their countries to let them get away with their criminal activity. It's all fiction, folks, and we don't need any of it. And I think we really have to see the opportunity that we've been given with this whole NSA, this whole Edward Snowden thing. And we've got to see the need for this as well, folks, because it is happening right around the planet. People are awake right around the planet. People are realizing that all of the little issues that they've been addressing, the coal seam gas mining, the whaling, the pollution, the oil companies, the Monsanto, the GM food, all of the stuff that we're facing, folks, people are starting to realize that it's no good having a compartmentalized response. We've got a splintered population, splinter groups attacking little symptoms of the one problem, which is the breach of trust of all of our governments. And the only people who can deal with that, folks, is us, the people themselves. We are the only ones who can take the matter in hand. We can do it lawfully. We can do it peacefully. We simply need to demand that these public servants show cause why they should not be held in breach of trust. And folks, look, the actions of Monsanto and the GM food alone, this should be enough to cause the world to stand up and actually take the matter in hand. I mean, where is the outrage from the people? Why is it that people aren't noticing what's going on right before their eyes? The mass holocaust we are seeing in the bee community. Bees are dying literally by the millions around the planet, folks. This is because of GM food, and it is causing an environmental holocaust around the planet. The GM food, the Terminator seeds, and the disgusting actions of Monsanto are really taking its toll around the planet. And this is happening, folks, because we're not addressing the situation that exists within our Western governments, because it's Western governments that are causing this problem. And we can't expect them to do it, folks. We can't expect remedy to be found within the legal system. We have to take the matter in hand. And really, like, look at it, folks. Look at the damage that it's doing. The environmental catastrophe that is Monsanto and is genetically modified organisms, we can't just allow this to happen and say, oh, there's nothing I can do about it because it says so on this piece of paper that what they're doing is legal. We've got to step above that, folks. We've got to really look at what's going on here and understand that if evil has a name, its name is Monsanto. And the only people who can address it are the people themselves. And like I said, folks, this issue alone is a clear breach of trust by Western governments. And the only people who can do anything about it are the people of our respective nations. The thing is, they have to be prepared to. They have to want to. They have to notice what's going on around them. And that's the hard part, folks, is that society is so distracted these days, And even the kids, they think the whole surveillance culture is okay because they've grown up with it. They've grown up with video games that are built on all this surveillance technology. They love it. They love to know that this sort of stuff is out there. And they think it's quite okay for it to be out there because they think the world is the way it's depicted on their video games. And it's a sad state of affairs, folks, but unfortunately it is true. You know, as I've often said, folks, there are so many people who are looking for the silver bullet. And even when I talk about things such as breach of trust, there are people who are going to say, well, okay, this sounds great. How do we go about it? What is the legal path? And again, they fall back into the legal system. They don't step above it. They don't realize that the revolution that the planet needs has to come from an evolution of consciousness, an evolution of spirit. We have to evolve into what we should be, spiritually speaking. You know, the revolution comes from within your heart. It's by knowing who and what you are. It's an evolution in the way of thinking, an evolution in your perspective of reality. And this evolution of consciousness, this evolution of spirit, it's hard to even call it an evolution because really it's us returning to what we should be before we were given this left brain reality and taught to believe that it was real. But it's not real. There's so much more to reality than what this system would have people believe. It's just that people have been trying to measure themselves within the parameters of the system, but there's really far better ways and far more realistic ways of looking at things. Each living being on this planet, each man, each woman, each child, each animal, each fish, each fly, each insect, each blade of grass, each tree, everything is unique, folks. Everything is unique in itself. Each is a unique expression of creation. You won't find two trees that look exactly the same. You won't find two shells exactly the same. You won't find two people exactly the same. Everything has its own unique expression of creation. And it is that uniqueness that is reality, makes up reality. Without that uniqueness, we don't have a workable reality. And everything this system is doing is attempting to homogenize this diversity and homogenize everything about the human spirit. But once people begin to realize their uniqueness and realize the uniqueness of everything around them and stand in that power, you realize that that is the silver bullet. Your silver bullet is your uniqueness. How can you be judged for doing anything wrong if you've done nothing wrong? If you've just stepped over somebody's fictional line or broken some rule that somebody wrote down in some book somewhere, and they're attempting to do harm to you because of that, then who is the one who is doing the wrong thing? It's the system, you see. It's not us. It's the system. But our system has trained us to believe that we always have to be answerable to the laws of our peers. But folks, you have no peers. You are unique. You are a unique expression of creation. And therefore you have no peers, therefore you cannot be subject to the laws of your peers. The only law that you are subject to is the law of creation itself, the laws handed to you by your Creator in the divine covenant that you hold with your Creator, the divine trust that you hold with your Creator, whatever that trust may be, whatever that covenant is. You are the only ones who know that because it is your covenant. It can only be you that would ever know what that relationship is, because you are unique. And even if you attempt to tell someone else what your relationship with your Creator is, they'll never understand it the way you do, because they can never see it from your perspective. So it's a unique thing. So how can anyone claim to have jurisdiction over you in any way, shape, or form? Because to do so would be to admit that they are operating a slavery system. And that's what it is. It's a system of financial slavery, a system of legal slavery. But worse than that, it's a system of intellectual and spiritual slavery. It's a system of conscious and artistic slavery. You know, I have so many people contact me and they say, Max, if you know this, then why don't you be our spokesperson? Why don't you go and take the system on? And we'll all stand behind you and hold your coat and hold your hat. Well, when I say you are unique, and when I say you have no peers, there is actually a legal terminology that describes this condition. And that legal terminology is sui generis. And I use this term simply for those who would like to have a legal definition of what I'm talking about. And I've mentioned it to you before. And that capacity of sui generis, knowing that you stand in the capacity of sui generis, is in fact a statement of your uniqueness. But this applies to everybody and everything, not just yourself. And if you believe this does apply to yourself, then you need to respect the fact that it does apply to everything else as well. Everything, by legal definition, is sui generis. And folks, because everything is unique, the people that operate within the parameters of the system, they are also unique. And I have no jurisdiction over them. I don't wish to fight their system because this system is fiction. So I'm fighting a cloud. And I only actually give the system power and give the system substance by fighting it. I'm just here. I live my life the way I live my life. I don't hurt anybody. In fact, I do what I can to help everybody that I come into contact with. So how am I doing any harm to anybody? How could anyone say that I've broken any law? And if the system wishes to claim that I have in some way and they wish to come to me, maybe they don't like what I'm saying, they'd like to come to me and tell me to be quiet and attempt to exercise jurisdiction over me, well, I'll require them to demonstrate that they have that jurisdiction because, as I said, I'm unique. I stand before them in the capacity of sui generis. Therefore, I'm answerable only to my creator. If they are claiming they have a right of ownership over me, then I require them to produce a contract bearing the wet ink signature of my creator, which granted them jurisdiction over this vessel that I inhabit, namely my body. If they can't show me that contract, then I require proof of claim. They are not part of a slavery system. But the point I'm attempting to make here, folks, is that because I'm unique and I can understand that everybody and everything else is also unique, and I can also understand that the system is fiction, then why would I want to go and fight or attack anybody or do anything against anybody when I can see that they have no jurisdiction over me? Because by attacking them, would I not be attempting to exercise my jurisdiction over them? Because, you see, I don't believe that I have any jurisdiction over them. If those people choose to follow this fictional system and allow it to rule their lives, well, that's their business. They're free to do that if they want to do so. That's no cause for me to get involved in their life. But if they choose to inflict themselves upon me because of their belief in a system that I have no part in, well, that's when I'm prepared to stand in my ground and exercise the power that I know I have. And I hope that made sense, folks, but what I'm saying here is that I don't go and fight it because it's fiction. I'm fighting a cloud. Why would I go and give it substance by fighting it? Because if I fight it, then I must believe that it's real. Otherwise, I wouldn't be fighting it, unless I'm simply in a state of fear-based mind control and I'm fighting an enemy which does not exist. And again, folks, this is what it is. It's fear-based mind control. The whole legal system is fear-based mind control. It doesn't really exist. It only exists on paper. It only exists in the minds of people who believe it exists. But like I said, you can step above that. You can step back into trust. And you can question the jurisdiction of the people who wrote the rules on the piece of paper to begin with. Because where do they get the power to do that? Well, they only got it from the people because they are public trustees. So you can always bring it back to trust, folks, and that's, I believe, the way the whole matter needs to be addressed. You know, it's an organic thing. There is no leader to this global revolution. there is no organization. There's nothing to target. There's no one to take out as the one head of the mechanism that's going to be the target for the New World Order to attack. There is no one spokesperson. There is no one methodology. There is no one way. There is the way of everybody's heart, the way of the people themselves. And it's an organic thing that manifests as people begin to understand who and what they are. And they begin to stand in the power of their creator, the power of their unique blessed spirit, their unique perspective of creation that they are, the unique frequency of consciousness that they are. You know, folks, with everything that's going on, with the huge outflow of people around the world, the huge protests that we're seeing, with the revelations of the information about the NSA spying, and the way that it's not just the United States, it's in fact many, many countries that are colluding to do this. The whole thing has been laid bare, and with all of this, we really are at a time of one of the greatest opportunities in human history. Now more than ever, we've got people that are online, people that are awake to what the world is and what they are. They're awake to the power that we have as a species, should we choose to exercise that power. They're awake to their individual power, because that's where it all comes from. It's got to come from the hearts of the people. That's what I mean, folks. There is no leader or face to this revolution, this evolution, this next step that mankind is about to embark on, the new adventure of human consciousness. There is no leader. There is no guide. The guide is our own hearts. There is no face to this revolution. It's a revolution of spirit. It's a revolution of consciousness. It's an evolution in the perspective with which people view things. And that's why it can never be stopped. It's organic, and it is self-perpetuating. There is no mechanism that the powers that be can ever put in place that is going to hold human consciousness down. We just keep moving the goalposts. We just keep evolving into something new. We just keep metamorphosing into a different paradigm. We won't be held down, folks. We are too creative for that. We are too innovative for that. And the more the powers that be work to lock human consciousness down, the more people wake up to the fact that everything is not well. The more they attempt to control us, the more freedom we crave. And it's always been like that, and it always will be like that. There's nothing they can do to stop us, folks. We hold all the cards, because we can create any reality we imagine. We can create any future that we imagine is possible. All we have to do is imagine it and participate in making that happen. And all we need to do it, folks, is respect. Respect for each other. Wake up to the shackles. Wake up to the chains that bind you, the financial chains, the social chains, the economic chains, the chains of racial division. Because they're all fiction, folks. They're all designed to splinter and divide human consciousness so that we never have a cohesive enough force to be able to stand against the system and bring about any positive change. But people are waking up to this now. People are waking up to the fact that it has been a divide and conquer situation. It has been all about division, and it's been created through fear-based mind control. But it's no longer a time to be afraid. It's now a time to come into your potential, to come into your power. This is the greatest opportunity we've ever had to do so, folks, and it's very, very gratifying to see the response that there has been around the planet to this global situation, because everybody's had enough. Everybody knows that there's no way to fix it through the governmental system, not unless we can introduce some form of transparency into the governmental system, but again, that's not going to happen until the people stand up and take the matter in hand. It's time for every person in every respective country to clean up their own backyard and to hold their public trustees accountable for their actions. It's time to shift the paradigm, folks. It's happening. It's happening right around the world. But it's still not happening in every country where it should be happening, and it takes the participation of the people for it to happen in every country. And you don't have to do much, folks. All you have to do is spread information and stop complying with the system of slavery. Stop complying with anything that seeks to repress or squash the human spirit. Stop complying with anything that promotes GM food, anything that removes the rights of the people to have a natural, toxin-free environment. Stop complying with any regulation that does not serve the people. And should your governments choose to impose such regulations on you, then use it as an excuse to question the government and to ask the government why they should not be held in breach of trust for their actions. Now's the time that we can do it, folks. Now's the time we can bring about effective change. All it will take is the participation of the people. And look, I know I've been harping on about this trust thing. I've been harping on about the need for people to participate. I've been harping on about the power of community for a long time now in these radio shows. A good 6 years I've been basically bringing you the same message in as many different ways as I can think of in an attempt to crack that shell with people and to help people understand what's going on and how easily remedy to this situation could be found. If the people were to discover themselves and they were to unite, put down their barriers with each other. Because all the barriers are fiction. They've all been created by this system. We don't need any of them. They're just there purposely to keep us divided. But there's far more to life than that, folks. There's far more to life than the distractions that we're given. And I really do believe that it's important that people pay attention to what's going on around them. It's important that we see the collusion between our Western governments and the incredible breach of trust that these governments are committing. It's important that we pay attention to the incredible damage that's been done by companies such as Monsanto, the incredible damage that's been done by fluoridation of our water supply and coal seam gas mining and all of the things that we're doing, folks. The list is enormous of the problems that we've created. And all of these problems have been created by corrupt legislation, corrupt corporations and corporate charters and all the things that our governments have allowed to happen. And they're doing it because we're not paying attention. Now we're distracted with who's the good guy and who's the bad guy and which contrived war is doing what and whose side we're in what battle and religious rubbish and whether abortion is a good idea or not and gay marriage and all of the stuff that they give you to distract you from any real issues. Because the real issue is the future of humanity itself. The future that is being destroyed by the genetic modification of our planet, by the total pollution and degradation of our planet, by the theft of all the resources of our planet, by public trustees, and it's happening because we're not paying attention. And I think it's time we did, folks. I think now more than ever, it's time that we did. Well, I think we're almost at the end of the show here, folks. Thank you for putting up with my ranting today. There's a lot of things I wanted to say. There's so much ground to cover on this, and there's so many directions we could take these conversations. And I do try to get a lot of information into a nutshell on these shows. So thank you for putting up with my ranting. And again, folks, if you're anybody in the region of northern New South Wales in Australia, or anybody in Australia who's had any type of experience in video production and television production, then please do get in contact, because it would be nice to put together some sort of a weekly show for this new TV station that David Icke is opening. It would be nice to participate in that if I can find the time to do it, but I will absolutely need some help if it's going to become a reality. So please, if you have any experience in any of those fields, don't hesitate to contact me, especially if you live in the northern New South Wales region. But that is it for me, folks. I'm now completely out of time. Thank you to anybody who has ever made a contribution to the website. Listen to all those people as well whose emails I have not answered. I'm so sorry. I've got messages built up and banked up all over the place at the moment. I just haven't been getting to anybody. And I've got so much on my plate that it's just very, very difficult to get to some of these messages. So please bear with me and please understand that you do have my love and respect, even if I have not been able to answer your email. But that is it for me, folks. We're completely out of time. Thank you for spending this time with me on the air today. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In Lakesh.